There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 748, March 6th, 2018. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I say greetings and welcome to Motorsports March Madness from Florida to Victoria. We shall explain gladly.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, ugly, ugly, ugly. Brutto, brutto, brutto. Haslick, Haslick, Haslick. LCH already laughing and called his cabinet maker to make a bigger trophy case for championship number 5. And this week's special interview is longtime F1 Weekly Familia member Felipe Nasser. And our bonus today is Loosh on the Loose's review of Jenson Button's new book. And of course, I want to remind everybody, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know you want to. That helps pay for server space. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing very good, sir. I do have a question for you. Cars are on the track. They are so beautiful that nobody is talking about the fugly halo. Is that what you are referring to?
I don't really care about what everybody's not talking about. I'm caring what I'm seeing, and it's the most hideous thing I've ever seen in my life. Why don't we just put a helmet over women like Sophia Loren? I mean, for God's sakes, and I know I'm dating myself here, but I know. Why don't we just blame everything on Jackie Stewart?
Well, you know, I'm so excited about these new cars that I have really paid no attention to the halo, but I have to say I agree with Toto Wolff. He wants to chop it off. So I feel your pain, but there is so much other good things happening.
Really?
Sir Rogers?
Well, please list them for me because I can't see any.
Well, Fernando Alonso will be racing with a Formula One engine to start with.
Okay.
Yes, and we're going to have a great... Plus, he's going to win Le Mans also.
That's true. That'll be fun. No, Lewis Hamilton, once he went to the podium, it was hilarious. He was laughing and giggling, knowing full well that now that he's crossed the 1,000 horsepower threshold, leaving everybody in the dust. Yes, there'll be cars going fast, but there certainly ain't going to be no boogity, boogity, boogity ration.
Well, I'm calling this the Dave Brubeck season take 5. Either it's going the red way for Sebastian or the silver way for LCH, and judging by how the first round of testing went, I think the wind is blowing towards Brackley and Stuttgart, which would mean Lewis Hamilton 5-time world champion. Wouldn't that be beautiful?
No, not that beautiful, but it is what it is.
No, not. It's just the feat of winning 5 championship would be great, whether it's Lewis or Sebastian Vettel. But, you know, the rain in Spain was mainly on Circuit de Catalunya on day 3. But on final day, like I said, a new version of take 5 was recorded by Lewis on a 44. This is just a personal opinion. I think the Mercedes is a good-looking car, but I really like the Ferrari. And with Sebastian at the wheel, I think they are battle-ready. And if they can just... the problem is, if the new Pecco package has another 0.3 Who knows? The Mercedes with over 1,000 horsepower may have another 0.6 or 7. I think we have a pretty good idea which way the championship will be going as we go into the second half of the season. Do you agree?
I completely agree. I mean, all it is going to be Mercedes playing it low-key for the first half of the season, let Ferrari win a couple, and then at the end, you know, there'll be a little bit. We don't have Nico Rosberg, so Valtteri Bottas, an excellent number two from the great number twos of our time. So, this is definitely going to be a great world champion.
Yeah, you know, Liberty Media is there on a big marketing push by them. I have a couple of ideas for them, you know. They should go and, since everybody knows Bottas is a solid number two, maybe they should get him a sponsorship from Avis. And you know who would be a very good sponsor for Raikkonen's car? I think it's about time we have a blue and green Ferrari sponsored by NyQuil for Kimi Raikkonen.
NyQuil is good.
Yeah, puts you to sleep very easily.
Indeed, indeed. So,
you know what was interesting on the final day? The fastest time was set by Lewis, and it was half a second faster than second place man on that day, which was Stoffel Vandoorne in a McLaren. And what is more impressive is that LCH was on medium compound while Stoffel was on hyper soft. So this is not a good sign for the rest of the competition. First round, and we'll see how it works out. And Sebastian Vettel's best time was set on the second day, and overall it was 0.3 of LCH time. But the man from Heppenheim, who is also on the Dave Brubeck team, Take 5, is of the opinion that Silver Arrows are the favorites, but it will be a tough battle. I think we're going to see some real speed on the last 2 days of the second test. I think that there is some more competition coming from Ferrari and especially Sebastian against LCH. But we'll see whose back will be broken first.
At least you're hoping.
Yeah, so, yes, the whole world rests on hope, you know.
Yes, and I just want to clear things up. These times you were talking about is how quickly you could build a snowman.
Yeah, well, that's what they did in Barcelona this time around. Yeah, and, you know, Red Bull, they won 3 races with Renault last season. This season, with the addition of McLaren and their double world champion from days of yore, and a heavy investment of senior people at their own team. It's looking good for both Red Bull and Renault, even though they did not have a, you know, like a mega session like Mercedes. And because of the new and improved ERS system, I don't know if you want to comment on this. I read that their Renault's ERS system is still in development stage, and the Renault power teams will be using their 2016 spec energy recovery system, which is not a very interesting c'est la vie for Monsieur Horner and Dr. Marco. You're the champion of French industry from Fécamp to Dochevaux. What's your take on what's happening here?
I don't know. I think maybe they're drinking too much wine and having too much fromage.
But, you know, they have a big, very solid program to be competitive in a couple of years, and they have a professor in-house. So I think they're going to keep inching us ever so slowly.
They better inch, because there's a good possibility they could pull out in 2021.
Yeah, but I definitely would like to see them be very competitive as they were in the early 80s with René Arnoux and Monsieur Prost. We need all these teams there, you know.
We do need them, and unfortunately, 2021 is going to be the breaking point for a few manufacturers.
Well, a lot will depend on how this political game is played by all these higher-ups, Ferrari, Mercedes, Liberty, FIA.
I agree.
And they've put themselves in such a situation that they are stuck with this hybrid technology, whether you like it or not. They can't go back, you know.
Oh, they could go back. They just don't want to.
No, I think it'll be very hard to go back to V8 or V10s, normally aspirated engines. Too much political heat on them now.
I guess. I mean, I'm still lost on the grid girls, so you'll have to forgive me for not keeping up with what the hell is going on.
Yeah, you know, I think both Formula One management and the new management at McLaren, they have one thing in common. If they want to get rid of anything and everything that was done by the previous regime. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
From the logo, and now they're hiring a guy who wrote the theme for Fast and Furious to write a new theme for Formula One. I mean, you know, who knows where this thing is headed?
Oh, I know where it's headed.
Where?
The gutter.
Huh. Okay, now let's talk about Eric Bouye and Zach Brown. They may find out, they found out actually, that you don't have any, if you don't have friends in the paddock, it could be of your own making. And, you know, they were calling it, requesting for a one more day of testing, and some of the team, you know, it has to be a unanimous decision, and some of the team just said no. And people were calling it the shark fin karma, because McLaren ditched the idea of shark fins because they wanted more exposure for the sponsors. That did not go down very well with them. And then your heroes, McLaren, turned into a Robin Reliant and went into kitty litter in the early stages of the testing session. And didn't he have a bizarre accident a season or two ago in pre-test testing in Barcelona?
Yes.
So I don't know what it is with him and that place, even though that's his home soil.
It's home soil, home paella.
Yeah, exactly. But talking of paella, much better performance is expected from the papaya cars this season. And this will certainly be a make-or-break season for Stoffel Vandoorne. Do you think he will survive racing against Nando in a much more competitive car than what they had last year?
Yeah, I mean, he'll survive. He's just not going to be ahead of Fernando.
Well, he really has to make a name for himself this year. Otherwise, Lando Norris is in the wings. And I don't think McLaren is looking for somebody who cannot race against Fernando Alonso to be their team leader in the next few years. I think this kid will do very well.
I do too.
Now, on the receiving end of the Honda engine, Toro Rosso and their drivers were very pleased with the Honda Hybrid F1 engine. Amazingly, they completed the most lap of any team, total of 324. And Pierre Gasly was as quick as Lewis in the speed trap on Thursday. So maybe Honda is coming back alive.
Well, we knew they would eventually. And I suspected that they would with another team. And they're going to go neener, neener, neener.
This is how I think it will work out. The better and more competitive Honda is with Toro Rosso, the more bitching and moaning we will get from Dr. Marco and Christian Horner against Cyril Abitbol and Renault.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, if this Honda package comes alive, it's not going to come alive in Melbourne, but let's just say halfway through the season, if they can qualify in the top three rows on a regular basis, then I think it will be Red Bull powered by Honda next year or very soon.
Very, very soon. I agree completely.
You know, Renault has also given a sort of a, I don't want to say ultimatum, but a deadline that Red Bull needs to confirm to them by May of this year. I think it's May, whether they will want Renault engines, because, you know, these engine manufacturers, they have to submit the teams they will be supplying by a certain date. So I think they're going to put the squeeze and the heat on Dr. Marco. Give Dr. Marco a taste of his own medicine and see how it works out.
Yeah. Should be very interesting, but you're right. Renault is squeezing them almost to the point where maybe they're hoping that they lose the supply chain to one team so they could focus more on their works team.
Yeah, I won't be surprised if in a couple of seasons this Honda program comes alive, and then, you know, Red Bull has been trying to ditch Toro Rosso for a while for the right price, of course, that they sell the Toro Rosso to Honda.
That would be unbelievable if Honda came back.
Well, they're back as an engine supplier. You know, if they start winning, I think they're going to put a lot of resources, i.e. money, behind this program because they want to win, just like Renault and just like anyone else.
Yes, everybody does want to win, but a lot of people want to win soon. And
oh, yeah.
The biggest problem is Mercedes.
Yes, that is very true. That is a big problem, and that package is so competitive that even if you put not the top-line drivers, they will still win races.
No doubt. No doubt indeed. Yes, It's going to be very interesting. I just don't see Renault making that huge leap forward where they could be competitive against Mercedes.
No, I don't think it will happen in 2018.
Nope.
The best chance would be with the new engine formula, whatever it is, in 2020.
Which could be a bomb.
Yeah. Who knows who else is coming. And it's a tough world out there, you know. Winning is not easy.
It's definitely a tough world.
Yeah, but I'm surprised. You know, when they were going to hybrid turbo engine, I really thought Renault, with all that experience in turbo engine, what Mercedes is doing is I was expecting them, not to that extent, but at least that type of performance and reliability, if not uber domination. But this thing has become a complete But you know, Clark, as you know, I'm a fan of racing history. And any time you look at the history of motor racing going back almost 100 years, you know, any time German companies have come in, whether it's Mercedes, Auto Union, Audi or whatever, again, going back 80, 90 years, they have cleaned everybody's clock. Even the cuckoo clock has been cleaned by Germans. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
I mean, you look at the 50s when they came back, they were very strong. In the 30s, they were very strong. So it's not a surprise.
Nothing's a surprise in Formula One.
But somebody has to, you never stay at the top. You know, even Michael Schumacher, Red Baron, was shot down by Nando. And I remember how the strong package McLaren Honda used to be, and then Williams Renault, and look at Williams today.
Yes, things have changed so dramatically.
But if we can get three or four teams winning like most of, you know, winning on a regular basis, then it can be a fantastic championship.
I agree, but we'll see what happens. I mean, I think right now, if Ferrari can be somewhat competitive, we might have a decent, fun season. But like I said, Toto is laughing, and Lewis Hamilton, I think, gauged it really, really well when he did that lap on medium tires and just blew everybody away.
Yeah, another problem with Ferrari, I think, is some years ago, you know, they should have taken some whippersnapper, you know. In those days, it was Nico Hülkenberg, and they could have tried, you know, this Charles Leclerc or even Max Verstappen. You know, if they had given Max a decent amount of money and equal status as Seb, I think that Ferrari can win a few more races.
It's possible. And that's the other thing, is Max Verstappen. You know, if the Renault package at Red Bull is not good, it's going to be frustrating for the young man.
Yeah.
And that could cause problems.
Yeah, but for him to sign an extension, okay, like which he did some months ago, they must have some very big plan for the engine supply, whether it's Renault or Honda or somebody else coming. You know, they are very close with the Volkswagen Group, Audi and all that, which includes Porsche also. So I don't know what their agenda is, but I'm getting the feeling more and more that it will be, in life after Renault, it will be Honda with Red Bull. So let me give you a rundown of the fastest times of the week. Like you said, you know, these are just times. I think the real tests will come in the final day or two, final 2 days of next test session. But anyway, fastest, of course, Lewis Hamilton. Sebastian Vettel was second. Vendome third. Ricciardo fourth. Kevin Magnussen, who is now talking about doing Indy cars after Formula One, was fifth. Hülkenberg, your Renault guy, sixth. Lance Stroll, seventh. Pierre Gasly, eighth. Esteban Ocon, ninth. And Charles Leclerc, Sauber, tenth. And talking of Force India, I mean, there's a very strong possibility that may be known as Force something, anything Force but India, by the time we get to Melbourne.
Yeah, their website still says Sahara Force India, so.
Yeah, their guy who's an American guy from Detroit, their main guy, Otmar Szafnauer, he was quoted as saying that almost everything is decided. It's just a matter of, you know, putting it all together. So I think we'll have a new name for the team before the season starts. Now, I have to ask your opinion. You followed for so long. What do you make of Lance Stroll as the team leader at Williams?
Wow. Well, why not?
Like they say, follow the money.
They got drivers that are millionaires, so.
No, Claire Williams has a new philosophy. Follow the billionaire.
Yes, why mess around with M's when you can go with B's?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is a team that had Senna and Alain Prost and Arnage and Alan Jones, tough guy. Now they got, how much money do you want? Let me call my dad.
Yes, and they write it off as, oh, this is just normal operating procedure.
But I love how they, you know, talk about the team people, that these are not paid drivers and how they justify their inclusion in the team.
It's so ridiculous. I mean, everybody knows, you know, they're both from billionaires' parents. I mean, I don't understand. There's nothing to hide here.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I mean, Williams, even with the Mercedes package, I think will be once again leapfrogged by Force India.
Oh, yeah. There's no question about it. It is. When they have this guy, Paddy Lowe, who came from Mercedes, and he was previously with McLaren. I think, you know, in a year or two, they will do better. And like you said, most teams want to win soon, but that soon won't be happen. But they were on pole in Austria some years ago. Remember that?
Yeah. I mean, things happen. But still, like I said, everybody wants to win soon because the engine rules are going to change. That could just change and mix up the whole grid. Not only that, but like I said, some manufacturers could be gone because of the rule changes. So we'll see what happens. I mean, things change so quickly.
Yeah, but, you know, if some manufacturers go, some may come in also.
I agree. We could have a Volkswagen.
Okay, now let me just give you the mileage put on by teams, okay? Toro Rosso had the most mileage, 937 miles, which is about 1,500 kilometers. Ferrari was second with 861 miles, which is about close to 1,400 kilometers. Mercedes had also same mileage. Now, interestingly, the bottom three, Force India had 479 miles during the test session, which is about 775 kilometers. And Red Bull had 603 miles, 972 kilometers. Mr. Max Verstappen made a trip to the kitty litter and also lost quite a bit of time due to an oil leak. But the best quote of the whole session came from Lewis Hamilton, even though it was reduced testing. He said he's ready for racing, and that's what he wants to do.
Yes, I think he's hoping for some kind of a challenge, but deep down he knows it's going to be.
Yeah, I think he knows he's got a great package, and he's going to win some races, and then come to LA and hang out with his what's up, yeah, Beyonce and Jay-Z, and, you know, to each his own.
I agree. I think that's cool. I'm happy for him.
I'd like to see him with Snoop Doggy Dogg or Sean Combs, Puff Daddy.
You would?
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
So why don't we take a break and listen to Loosh on the Loose's book review on Jensen Button's new thriller. Take it away.
Hi, this is Lucian Byfield from South Australia with Loosh on the Loose. Today, I'm going to be doing a book review, the book Life to the Limit by Jensen Button. Life to the Limit is a love story, but not the kind you expect, for there are no elaborate tales of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, though a few parties and alcohol-fueled days do feature regularly in this book. Jensen, a polite, mature, and prudent ladies' man, has certainly had his fair share of beauties, but he ain't kissing and telling, and certainly has not embarrassed anyone in this book. Well, not the ladies, anyway. This book is a love story of a different kind, multifaceted, primarily focusing on the love of motor racing, but, most notably, the love between a father and a son. It is at times quite raw, candid, and emotionally revealing for Jensen to open up about his father the way he does, especially considering his British, humoured, evasive style of conveying his thoughts in this book, which is often tinged with self-depreciation, humour, and light sarcasm. Often, biographies are chronological, and when a sportsman or musician, or anybody writing a biography, puts down his or her life in print, it can at times be a bit laborious and tedious, but high praise is given for the refusal to elaborate unnecessarily and to bore the reader with facts, figures, and lap times. Rather, and possibly dumbed down a little too much, Jensen has chosen to speak of his career in layman's terms, so that even the most illiterate motor racing observer could understand the basic principles without feeling stupid or out of the loop. One strange feature of the book is how it is divided up into such small sections, with chapters within sections often being 2 to 3 pages long, with half pages blank. I wonder how long the book would be if all of the half pages were taken out. But that also may be the strength of the book, for it could be said that it is set out in bite-sized pieces that are so easily digestible, leaving the reader with a sense of accomplishment rather than the feeling of a studious experience in reading needlessly long chapters. At times, I feel Jensen left out the details we wanted. While he does mention his disdain for Flavio Briatore and an odd driver or two, he never waxes lyrical, and I personally wanted a bit of biffo to hear some of the aggro and the BS that is inevitably found in any high-profile sport. Also, I would have liked to hear a bit more about his relationships with the ladies he dated, but his abrupt and possibly evasive explanations of mutual amicable separations left me feeling that there was much more to the story sometimes. One thing very rare to hear from modern drivers is that they have been influenced by Alain Prost. We hear so many drivers speak of Senna and Schumacher as the pivotal inspirations that have led them to becoming some of our greats today, like with Alonso, Hamilton and Vettel. But Jenson Button is strong in his praise, admiration, and attributes being massively influenced by the style of the Professor. Prost was a true great, missing some of the Latin flair of a Senna, but Jenson is clear that the methodical, quiet, and smooth style is what motivated him in many ways, including Alain's reserved and thoughtful manner in which he conducted himself. There is a cheeky showman in Jenson Button, which we get to see at times in this book, but overall, he is an almost spoilt mama's boy, strangely balanced out by a man's man of a father. Jenson has no shame in admitting that he is shy, quiet, and conflict avoidant, but at times reveals his stronger side. But as you will see in the book, it took extremes to bring that out of him. In conclusion, it is hard to dislike JB. This is a great read, simple to follow, and with enough interesting tales, rarely fixating to the point of boring the reader. I would give it a high ranking, but the only thing missing for me is a bit of the biffo, the aggro, and some non-PC tales and opinions. It is a great change to read a motor racing story without the exaggerations, but at times Jensen can come across as a little too polished and polite. Great book overall. This is Lucien Byfield from South Australia.
Luce, keep up the good work. The check is in the mail. Nass, let's take a quick break and we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Philippe Nass and you listen to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. You know they say money makes the world go round.
Well, that's why F1 Weekly is so successful.
Yes. So today we're going to start with Shondell's segment, Money, Money. Now, this information I got from F1i.com, which is actually a Francais website, but they also have an English button, you know, you can click and get stuff in Anglais. And it just shows how much money each team is paying FIA for the privilege of racing in Formula One this season. Money, as we all know, is based on points earned. This rate is higher for the championship-winning team. All teams pay a base entry fee of $516,128 plus $5,161 per point scored. The rate is higher for the championship-winning team at $6,194 per point scored. Here is a sampling of money dished out by some teams in November of last year when payment is due. Check this out, man. Mercedes-Benz is obviously at the top of the heap, and the money they paid was $4.2 million. Ferrari paid for finishing second, $3.2 million. Red Bull, $2.4 million. Force India, $1.4 million. All the other teams paid less than $1 million. Williams, $944,000. Renault, $810,000. Toro Rosso, $789,000. Haas F1, $758,000. McLaren, $670,000, which to me sounds like a GP2 entry fee. And that was Jalapeno Gazpacho of the day. And finally, Sauber, they paid $541,000, proving once again Swiss are good at managing money. Grand total from all teams, $16,276,544. This is nothing compared to what you pay out in bonuses, right?
Correct.
The zeros are endless.
Totally.
We had a Formula E race from the Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez, and the winner was Daniel App from Germania for the Audi Op team. And our friend Mr. Alan McNish is the team principal for the official Audi Formula E team. And Daniel App was advertising his victory as his second first win because he had won a race earlier, but he was disqualified on a technicality. So our congratulations to Mr. Daniel App for getting his first and much deserved win. You know, he used to race in GP3, and we have interviewed him a few times. Nice young kid. And his family, the Opt ABT family, run the team in German DTM also. Do you have any update on the latest NASCAR race? Because I missed out on that.
I have no updates. I have nothing. But I do know that there's a lot of new young faces in NASCAR this year.
Oh, yes. But the youngest face has just done her last race.
Well, but she's got a Rogers in her life now.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Sweet loving.
And coming soon to the Brickyard. She's on it.
Let's hope so.
Yes. Anything else, sir, would you like to talk about before we move on to the Felipe Nasr interview?
No. Looking forward to more testing. Hopefully, Renault is sandbagging and they're actually going to dominate. Besides that, I usually wake up in a cold sweat.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of YouTube on the F1 testing, and it's very, very exciting, I have to say, man. You know, people talk about this holiday, that holiday, three-day weekend. Nothing compares to the opening day of the Formula One season. And that's just, you know, speaking for myself, of course.
Of course. Well, let's see what Liberty brings us for the opening day. It could be pretty interesting.
Yeah. You know what they should do? They should do like a kangaroo dance on the grid before the start of the race to get a flavor of the land they are in.
I'm sure the animal activists will not be happy with that, Nasser.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Yes, everything has everything has to be neutral.
Yes.
Beige colors, everything has to be PC now, Nas.
Who is coming up with these ideas?
Bob Newhart?
Okay.
He's running the show, I heard.
Okay, good.
So, why don't we...
I want to ask you a question. What do you think about this thing of online subscription to watch races and select any driver, inboard, you know, the things they're doing on the digital media side? It sounds very exciting.
I think it's great. I mean, poor people can't do it, but everybody else can.
Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody has to dish out a lot of money. I get these channels which I never ever watch. If I'm watching Formula One, then that's what I want to watch, not be subjected to 30 other channels, you know, that I never watch.
I understand. I agree with you. I think these are all great ideas. If you want to, the more you pay, the more access you should get, and I think that will be the future.
Yeah, because you know, MotoGP has that streamlining available for a few seasons. I'm going to look into this thing, you know. I watch a lot of stuff now on YouTube, on my laptop, or, you know, a lot of time even on my lunch break on my cell phone. Now the quality of videos is so fantastic. You really enjoy it no matter what size of screen you're looking at. But I will seriously look into this, the F1 subscription thing. I will, because if the quality of the video is good, which I think will be very good, then I may jump on this bandwidth wagon. Okay, Mr. Rogers, I'll take your advice.
Thank you very much. Why don't we get into this week's special interview?
Yes, sir. This was with our cousin, Felipe Nasr, and it was good to meet with him. And I really wanted to talk to him about his time in Formula One. And I spent a lot of time with his uncle, Amir Nasr, at a great time talking about what was going on at Sauber. And of course, you know, Felipe Nasr made his Grand Prix debut on the weekend where Sauber was involved in that legal battle with Guido Vondegaarde. So I talked about that also. And he's racing a full season in the IMSA championship here. And hopefully we will see him soon, maybe, you know, in a year or two in Indy cars and Indy 500. Many thanks to his uncle for his time and also for Felipe to, you know, invite me to his motorhome at Daytona and sit down and have this conversation. Please enjoy.
Okay, folks, we're in the comfort of a motorhome of Mr. Felipe Nasr. Cousin, good to see you again. Welcome back to Daytona, USA. How are you?
Thank you, cousin. I'm good. Happy to be back to one of the best races in the world in Daytona. And it's good to see you again. It's been a while.
Thank you. Yes, thank you so much. A great start to the season with second place finish. Happy with the result, or was there more?
I hate to finish second. I don't like at all to finish second, but that's racing sometimes. And I have to say I'm, first of all, happy for the opportunity to be joining Action Express in the Wieland Engineering Cadillac car this season for the full IMSA season, which is going to be a new adventure for me. And we just started here at Daytona, the 24 Hours of Daytona. That's my third participation in the race. And it's been a fantastic weekend. We've shown a strong pace. Like every day we had the car on track, we were one of the quickest. You know, the car was always in good shape. The race was going pretty well. Unfortunately, we had a few issues during the duration of the race. For example, I had a puncture when we had the car in the lead lap. Mike Conway had an issue on the engine side. He had to box at the garage. And Eric Curran as well, when we had the car 30 seconds in the lead, he had to come in to change the tail light of the car. So all these little things didn't help, but as I said, sometimes racing goes to one side and maybe the next time will be your side. So, but I'm happy with the event. You know, I was happy to be back here. It's a race I always enjoyed doing since my first time, and got in a second place finish here for sure. It's fantastic. I joke because I hate being second, but it means we're going to go better next time, one place better.
You had some issue with fellow countryman Elio Castroneves. What happened there?
Yeah, we had a little contact there, which we were fighting through. We did fight a lot during the beginning of the race. Elio was a tough man to overtake on track, and I managed to pull out a good move on the outside of turn three. And then by the night, when I was driving in the night time, we had a little contact as well in turn three, which I got a damage on my front splitter, so I had to come in to change the front nose. But nothing critical. We kept the car going. The car was fine. And it's just unfortunately that I guess they did hit some issues with their cars, I guess.
In terms of driving style and technique, how big and challenging is the adjustment going from single-seater racing to sports car racing?
Well, I guess nowadays the sports cars, they drive very similar to single-seaters. So I didn't have to adapt at all to driving style, but just the vision inside the car and the sharing of the car. You know, maybe the car might not be perfect to you in terms of balance, but you have to think on a group and the team and the way you are positioning the car as well. So but as I said, the cars to drive are fantastic. You know, our Dallara chassis, you know, the car itself, they have an amazing braking performance. The downforce in the corners, everything is so good that it feels like a Formula car.
Okay. Now, there are many good tracks here in the U.S. like Road America, Laguna Seca, Road Atlanta.
I don't know any.
I
know them by TV, but I don't know that I never driven on them, so it's gonna be a new challenge.
Yeah, which track? You probably are familiar with video games layout.
Video games and simulators. With all of those you said, there are tracks that I always wanted to race. As I always had my career mostly in Europe and overseas, but I never, like tracks like you mentioned, Road America, Watkins Glen, Laguna Seca, these are all tracks that I used to play on my PlayStation, and it's going to be a real thing this time.
And you will love these places also, the towns around them, especially Long Beach and Monterey in Northern California. Okay, did you explore possibilities in IndyCar racing before deciding on sports car racing on this side of the pond this year?
Well, I guess it's on the radar. It's something I still feel like doing, as I'm only 25. But I guess, you know, the timing to be joining IMSA is... it's great. The championship is as competitive as it could be. You have great teams entering the championship. But IndyCar is something I have in the list that, you know, maybe, you know, like I would love to do an Indy 500 sometime. And if that will open doors to do a full championship, then why not?
Now, in March 2015, your dream came true and you became a Formula One driver in Melbourne. And you had the best ever debut for a driver from the land of Fittipaldi, Piquet and Senna. Tell us about that day and how popular you became the following day in your country, because the media coverage was incredible globally.
Yeah, it was a global, boom around, you know, especially in Brazil, as we have so much history in the sport. All I can remember was, I think, was one of my best days in my career. Just to be going into a race and something that I always dreamed about it. And it was a bit chaotic though when the weekend arrived, because we were not sure we were going to race. Because
that question is coming up.
But anyway, answering the question, was by far one of the best moments I had in my career, to be bringing the car, you know, fifth, and knowing that that was the best ever result for a Brazilian in Formula One. So, something to remember.
Absolutely, and also very proud to be in that position. Now, being on the grid for your first Grand Prix, did you feel any extra pressure or bigger butterflies in your tummy before the start of the race?
To be honest, I felt excitement, you know. I felt the desire to do well, but I wasn't feeling nervous or anxious, or I just wanted the race to start, and once it started I knew what I was doing, so it was pretty nice to hold Ricciardo for so many laps and bring the car fifth ahead of him. He's the local boy, so was a fantastic race.
Okay, now you mentioned chaotic. Before the race, we had the ugly legal mess of Guido versus Sauber. How did that sit with your sponsors, especially Banco do Brasil, and for you also, with all that's going on?
Well, it was always going to be complicated to understand the whole situation. And at the time, Monisha was in charge, so she had to find a way to... finalize the deal with the drivers. That was her job at the time, and an extra driver that was under contract as well, he came to appeal on that weekend against the team, and if the case wasn't solved before, we couldn't race. So basically that's what we had, and luckily the outcome was in a positive way in the end of the weekend. Otherwise, would have been, you know, those things are negatives for sponsors and everything else.
From your personal point of view, did you know about the situation before you arrived in Australia?
Once I got out of the plane on a Sunday, I knew about the news. So the week before, I landed in Australia, that's when I got the news.
Okay. Then we have, in 2016, you and the team had a very difficult season. I remember talking to you at Austin briefly about it. And in Monte Carlo, you and your teammate Marcus Ericsson came together. Can you share with us what happened after the race and, you know, what was said between the team members?
Well, from what I remember, the race was started wet, and I think I started from the pit lane, if I'm not wrong, because I had an engine, my engine blew out, so I had to, I had an engine change, so I could, I had to start from the pit lane. So I was making ground in the race, and the track starts drying, and once I switched to slicks, I made my own position on track, and you know, the team asked me to switch back positions, to, not to switch back, but to give the position to him, but I never found that was the right way. As, you know, Monaco, you make your own spaces, you know, in such a tough track, it's your own. So, and then he decided to drive, try to do the move that didn't work.
Did that affect your relationship with Marcus down the season?
I mean, me and Marcus, I've raced with him in GP2, and you know, é para falar a verdade ou não é?
Okay.
Ele tá perguntando do Marcus Ericsson.
We need a translation of that, please.
Ele perguntou se a minha relação com Marcos no... Eu te liguei porque eu... Just a sec.
Eu liguei no teu zap.
É, eu acabei de ver, mas é porque eu...
Christian, how are you?
Very well, very good.
Good to see you again.
Eu perdi minha... tinha perdido minha chave do carro, cara. Eu ia falar pra você ver se você não tava... Que às vezes eu boto num casaco que não era meu. Mas já achei.
Achou?
Já achei.
Ask him how many times he showered this week.
See, I need dirty laundry on him. I'm doing an interview, so.
Well, ask him how many times.
Okay, you're the witness. Christian Fittipaldi wants me to ask you, how many times have you showered this week?
More than once or twice. Since Wednesday, maybe twice, maybe two times.
Okay, well,
we're on a Sunday, so that's what.
Now, how does Christian Fittipaldi know this? That's what I want to know.
Because he doesn't take a shower at all. Oh. Since Wednesday, he's been...
So you're his role model.
Yeah, I'm a little better than him.
Okay, now we're going to move on to something very important for mankind. You have raced all over the world, apart from tracks in Brazil. Which track in this world has the best-looking Chicas de Pista?
Chicas de Pista?
Apart from Brazilian tracks.
You mean here in you, in or around the world, you mean?
Around the world, apart from Brazil.
Mexico, Australia, where else?
Barcelona?
Italy, Barcelona. Yeah, I would say those.
I asked Fisichella and he said Hungary. Is that correct? Do you agree with him?
Oh, maybe he went to some dirty places in Hungary to find those girls.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Okay, you mentioned track racing at Monte Carlo. You've raced at Macau. How is Macau compared to Monaco in terms of driving challenge?
Macau, it's like a bigger version of Monaco with some extra high-speed corners. But the level of difficult, both require like extreme concentration, and you have to be as precise as possible. And it's a track that you must be such in a flow, in a state of mind and connection with the car and the body and mind. Otherwise, you aren't gonna be fast around it. But I would say Macau and also Monaco. These are one of my favorite tracks I've raced so far.
Okay. Lately, you have done some races in your land also, Brazil. Are you planning on doing some races in Brazil?
It was just a few invitations I had to drive a GT3 Porsche Cup that we had over there. But at the moment, my focus is over here. So it was just a few invitations I had. So.
Well, we are very happy to have you here. When you're based in the United States, what would be your home? Miami, like a lot of drivers from South America?
At the moment, Miami is the place I'm going to be for now, but I'm not sure. I'm exploring. Let's see what I'm going to find best for me. So,
Now, as you know, we at F1 Weekly have been following your career with great interest since you raced a Formula BMW car to podium finish in Sao Paulo. We wish you all the best. How about a message to our listeners in English and also some Portuguese, because we have listeners in Portugal and Brazil.
Well, thank you, cousin, and thank you for all the listeners and the fans out there who had followed all the news here, all the updates from the motor racing world by my friend here next to me, and to everyone that supported my career as well. I want to say a big thanks, and to follow my new adventure here in the 2018 IMSA Championship.
And some Portuguesa, please, por favor.
Eu queria agradecer a todos os torcedores e fãs que acompanham a minha carreira e também torcem aí pelo sucesso, e que fiquem de olho nessa temporada do IMSA 2018, que está bem bacana e vai ser um ano bem competitivo.
Obrigado.
Thank you very much.
Felipe, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nas, keep up the good work. Another bonus check is in the mail. And quickly, I know you're going to be off to St. Petersburg to cover another IndyCar session. Hopefully, more interviews.
Yes, sir. That's the plan. I have sent a couple of... See, this is the thing, you know, when you sent out a request for an interview with, you know, one of the big heavy hitters, and then everything is on hold, you know, till you hear from them. And that's... But I just got some good news from my work. I have a four-hour furlough, so I can leave work at noon on Friday. I was planning on working all day Friday, so this will allow me to go there on Friday. The place is only 20 minutes from where I live, and hopefully I can catch some good interviews on Friday and definitely pick up some on Saturday and Sunday also. So I'm very excited.
No, that's going to be very exciting. The Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg. A fun day for you. 110 laps. Last year's race winner was Sebastian Bourdais.
Yeah, and it's a very, very nice town, St. Petersburg. I really liked it. You know what? Do you remember when we did the interview with Stirling Moss?
Yep.
I was in California, and I had flown into Tampa and then to Fort Lauderdale and all that. But I remember on the way back from Tampa, I had like a several-hour layover. So I got in my rental car and drove across the bridge to St. Petersburg, and I remember it had made a big impression on me at that time. And I've been to this race since I've been here, and which is I don't know, a few years old now, but it's a very, very nice area where the race is, and you know, beautiful Florida weather. You can't beat that unless you're in Cali. So it's a fantastic way to start the season, that's for sure.
Yep, and I just want to remind everybody the race is Sunday, March 11th.
Yes, sir.
Very good, Nas. Keep up the good work. I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Good night.
Bye-bye.